Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your hosts, Drew Tignanelli and Tim Maurer.
This is Drew Tignanelli here on Money, Riches, and Wealth. Tim Maurer is not here tonight. He's going to a presentation with Taharka Brothers, as he interviewed them a few weeks ago to talk about some of the good work that they're doing in helping children in the area, young men, trying to make an improvement in their life. Let's put it that way. So we hope that he has a great night tonight, but I am have a great night tonight because I'm going to have the honor of interviewing probably one of the foremost economists in the world, in my opinion, Dr. John B. Taylor. He's Raymond Professor of Economics at Stanford University and the George P. Schultz Senior Fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution. He has served as a senior economist, a member of the President's Economic Council of Economic Advisors, and as Treasury Undersecretary for International Affairs from 2001 to 2005. Tonight we're going to talk about his book and many other things, actually, but his recent book, First Principles, and Dr. Taylor will only be with us for the first half hour of the show. After that, we're going to have an open show and answer any of your questions. So right now, without further ado, I'd say let's just bring Dr. Taylor in. Dr. Taylor, are you here?
I am. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Well, first off, I understand we had John Tomasi with us, Dr. John Tomasi with us last week, and he told me that you won the 2012 Hayek Prize.
I did. I was very, very pleased about that. It was really nice. I won it for this new book I wrote about first principles. So it's terrific from my perspective.
Yes, sir. And your book, First Principles, really hits to the core. You know, you basically lay out, as you call it, the five keys to restoring America's prosperity. And we're going to go through some of those. But first, I wanted to also talk about that you also are the one that the Taylor Principle or the Taylor Rule is named after, right?
Yep, that's true. That's what people call it. It's about a guideline for monetary policy, so makes the economy work better, in my view, if people follow it. So it's got a little nickname, that's right.
Well, tell us what it is real quick, because you know,
sure.
I know what it is, but I'm sure most of our listeners don't.
Well, the Federal Reserve, our central bank, they are in charge of setting the interest rate for monetary policy, and as a guideline for helping them decide what to do, I designed this really kind of a formula which says that the interest rate should rise by a certain amount when inflation rises and be cut by a certain amount when there's a recession. And it turned out to be pretty useful because when the Fed and other central banks were pretty close to that rule, not exactly, of course, but close, things worked well. And when they got away from it, things have not worked so well.
So the inflation rate in 2011 was over 3%, and right now interest rates are basically zero.
Yeah. Well, my rule, my formula, says rates should be a little higher now than they are, not the zero number.
Where would you put them if you were a central banker right now? Where would you want?
I think they'd be better off around for the Fed Reserve anyway, about around 1%, and I think it'd be helpful for people who are, you know, depending on
savings and investments,
things like that. It also would, you know, be getting them back on track to the kind of policies that worked very well in the 80s and 90s until very recently, because as I say, they kept pretty close to that kind of a policy. And now they're off.
Yeah. So, you know, that's part of your issue here. Is, let's start with the first principle, establish a predictable policy framework for rebuilding the economy.
Right. That is the first principle. And it's not only monetary policy which has gotten off that principle by discretionary actions. They call it sometimes quantitative easing, massive purchases of securities, and moved away from the kind of rules that worked in the past. But it's also fiscal policy, and that includes these temporary stimulus packages or cash for clunkers. things that really don't have any lasting impact, if an impact at all. So those are really unpredictable kinds of policies, and we get off track and follow those, and it makes things worse. And we've seen in the past, we saw it in the 60s and 70s, especially late 70s, and we're seeing it now again.
So from some of the statistics I've read is that in the last 4 years, the legislation which cost businesses and individuals money has gone up at the fastest rate since the Great Depression. Is that true?
It sounds right. I don't know which legislative actions they're referring to, but if you're, I'll give you a way I think about it, is if you look at the number of tax provisions in the legislation, the tax code, they've gone up. The number of provisions changing each year has gone up by that dramatic amount. So that's a good example of what you're referring to. And it causes tremendous uncertainty. We don't know what taxes are going to be next year. We have no idea now because of all the unpredictability that's been caused largely by Washington at this point.
And we've had that. We had that in 2008, and then we had it again in 2010. Now we're struggling with it again in 2012.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I'm an advisor, and I work with clients and try to say, okay, this is what we're going to do with your estate plan. This is what we're going to do for income taxes. And, you know, you're really just stuck in the water trying to help people right now.
I know exactly what you mean. And then add to that businesses that are deciding whether to expand or not, whether to hire or not. People who are on fixed incomes deciding how much they can spend. There's just a whole wide range of uncertainty out there, which I believe is really why we're not doing so well. It's holding the economy back.
This health care bill is probably one of the biggest monsters that I've ever experienced. Even my company, which has just 10 or 11 people, to deal with this new health care law is amazing, the amount of time that we have spent on it in our little company.
Yeah, many people are saying that, large firms, small firms, some firms have gotten these waivers, of course. That's another problem, if you like. If you've got some special deal, special relationship, you get a waiver from having to impose these. That's really not very predictable or good policy. So, but it's all over the place, and I think it's another example where people are holding back, not knowing what the policy is going to be on health care.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people, Dr. Taylor, who say that, you know, if we didn't do what we did, this economy would have gone back into the Great Depression of the 1930s, and we would have a lot of hurting people throughout this country. You'd have food lines again, et cetera, et cetera. What's your response?
I don't think there's any evidence for that. People can say that, but when I look carefully at these actions, say the stimulus package in 2009 or 2008, as you mentioned, when you look at those, they just don't have an impact of almost any kind. And so what that kind of argument that things would have been worse, you can always say that, but the question is there proof? And I see no proof. I think it's on the contrary. And then you have the, you know, the bailouts, the same thing. Because, oh, we didn't bail out this firm, it would have been a disaster to the financial system. We didn't bail out the automobile industry, it would have been a disaster for the automobile industry. But in each one of those cases, you can see, well, what exactly would it have been without those? And I think in many respects, we'd be better off now if we hadn't done virtually all those actions.
Well, Dr. Taylor, I have to take a quick break for a minute or two, so if you'll hold on with us, we'll come back and finish up our discussion on First Principles, the book that you've written, and we're going to turn it over to Rich Andres with traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Dr. John B. Taylor. He wrote the book First Principles, Five Keys to Restoring America's Prosperity. And we're going to do the end of our interview here in the last 15 minutes. I appreciate you being with us, Dr. Taylor.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about that. And, you know, in my opinion, you at the end of the last break, you said that if we didn't bail out this one, if we didn't bail out that one. In my opinion, we making more mistakes by keep bailing out financial institutions, fearing what would happen, and we're actually perpetuating bad decisions in the financial system because they assume that they're going to get bailed out. Do you agree?
You're right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we have evidence for that.
Do you think the J.P. Morgan situation is evidence of that?
It's hard to look at one particular firm, but I think in general, the larger firms, and J.P. Morgan certainly a larger firm, have been classified even more and more as this so-called too big to fail. And what that means is they're more likely to be bailed out, and therefore they will tend to take larger risks. So it's definitely a problem. We've seen it in the past. And that's why it's so important for policymakers not to always give in to these calls for bailouts, to stand back and say, no, this is going to work okay without the bailout, and then things will work better in the future as a result.
Now let's go to this fourth principle, because I want to get this one, since our show is about personal finances and so forth. Trust in the power of markets. Okay?
Yes.
And so there's a lot of people that are saying, I mean, especially, you listen to Europe, I mean, they're always crying that it's the speculators. It's the speculators. They're the ones destroying the system over there. But you're saying, no, trust the markets. And they don't want to do that anymore.
Absolutely. Europe is such a good example where it's the government policy that has made the mess. It's borrowing too much. Monetary policy had interest rates too low, the over-committing the government to do too many things, and then you get in these messes, and then you blame the markets. It's exactly the opposite. We're doing the same thing here. People tend to blame the markets for the financial crisis, when if you look carefully, you can see that so much of the action has been from the government side. So it's very important. That's why I wrote this book. I think it's clear if you look at history. But it's a tough argument because people don't trust markets enough, and you got to make that clear. I hear what you're saying.
You know, like in Europe, they legislate everything. I talked a few weeks ago how there was an egg crisis in Europe because they had just passed a bill that said you had to have so many square feet for each chicken. So they killed a bunch of chickens so that they had enough square footage of cages. And it just shrunk the egg population tremendously.
Yeah, the unintended consequences. People think they're doing something good and they end up doing bad. It happens. It happens a lot. And that's what I think we're doing too much of here. Those interventions you asked about are the bailouts. People were trying to do some good, but it had these other bad effects.
Yeah, and also when you say, okay, we're going to stimulate the economy and we're going to do first-time home buyers and we're going to do cash for clunkers, but, you know, the guy that bought the car a month before they announced the policy, he didn't get that cash. A month
right.
later, somebody else buys a car and he gets a bunch of cash.
Yeah, there's that unfairness there. Plus, the guys who got the cash, they just bought a little earlier. They probably would have sold it later anyway. So it doesn't help the economy at all. Basically, it's a little blip, and then we're in this doldrums again.
Okay, emphasize the rule of law over the arbitrary actions of government. I guess that's what we were really just talking about right there, the arbitrary actions of government.
Absolutely, it is exactly that. A bailout doesn't follow the rule of law. The rule of law is we have the bankruptcy code. If a small firm, you're talking about your firm, if you get in trouble, they get bailed out. It's only those big firms. That's not the rule of law. That's not what made America great in the past.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. This is a practical question, Dr. Taylor, and that is that I would agree with all your principles and that you're saying here, the five keys to restoring America's prosperity. And the Internet has been a powerful force in the world, but one of the negative consequences of something like the Internet that gets you the ability to get information so quickly is that politicians have become much more about generating voter base, and they can read that real quick on moves that they're doing here and there. How do you get politicians to stop making decisions based on their own power base and ones that are good for the country as a whole?
Well, that's the nature of democracy, right? I think what you're pointing to is that it can get worsened by the Internet. What you have to do is, I think, number one, educate the people so they know. And I think a promising development here is that a lot of people are waking up. You have the Tea Party movements. You have the efforts of people looking at the Internet and giving their own proposals for changes in policy. So it makes me, actually, quite frankly, a little optimistic that America will get over these problems and we'll get back to strong growth again, because people are going to demand it. And if I could just add an example, in the late 70s, we had a terrible economic situation, high unemployment, high inflation, slow growth, losing leadership around the world. And basically people said enough of this, and they changed the people in charge. People changed their policy, and look what happened. We had over a couple of decades of good growth. So we can get back to good policy again.
How would you deal with, if you were able to just wave a wand and do what you wanted to, how would you deal with the health care issue in this country?
Well, we really got to move away from the Health Care Act of 2010. That, as you mentioned before, has an enormous number of intrusion by government and makes uncertainty for the private sector. So you move away from that. Number two, you reform some of the programs like Medicare, which is exploding in its size. But you do that in a way which gives people choice and the ability to decide what kind of insurance program they're going to have, what kind of health care they're going to have, with help from the government, as Medicare currently gives it. And that really reduces the spending in a way that improves people's lives. So I think in both the cases, whether it's government or private sector, the message is to have more decisions made at the individual level where people know what's going on, the doctors know what goes on, the patients can talk to the doctors, rather than have this dictated from Washington or somewhere else at the center. And to me, that's the key to reform. And it was a little bit like your idea of trusting in markets, but this time it's trusting in people. And I think that's really what we have to get back to. We're not there now.
And I would agree with that. But, you know, one of the problems with health care, though, becomes there's a lot of people who have made decisions they didn't want to carry insurance at all. And then all of a sudden when they have a medical disaster and they made that choice, now all of a sudden it's a disaster and they want somebody to help them. So, you know, that's the problem I see with health care, is that it's so an emotional issue. And
right.
People make decisions, and then they're sorry they made the decision, and then it's everybody else's problem.
It is. We've always had that, of course. For years, people didn't have insurance. It was a relatively new thing. But, you know, we were generous. The doctors were generous. Some doctors would charge a lower price to people who couldn't afford it. The hospitals would always admit people. So America has been good at that, I think, in helping people, but now we have this incentive, if you like, to try to get around the system and game the system. I think it's going to be worse with all these mandates that are being imposed.
What would you do with tax policy? Now, that's probably the area where government mingles with the economy, you know, or fools with the economy more than any. What would you do to it?
I would reduce these tax rates that we have, the very high tax rates on businesses and on individuals.
Now, we have some of the lowest individual rates in the world, but we have some of the highest corporate rates in the world.
Right, that's exactly right. We do have the highest in the world now. I think we're even beating Japan. And so those rates coming down would be important. I think, you know, to me, the biggest fear people have about the taxes right now is that they're going up. And they see the big deficit. They see the spending gotten out of control. And they say, how are we going to resolve this without an increase in taxes? And so I believe you can. I believe if you bring spending back simply to where it was in 2007 before the crisis, then you'd be able to balance the budget without an increase in taxes. And that would be so good for the economy. In some sense, keeping things steady, keeping the rates from going up, it would be a major accomplishment. But I also think, as you mentioned, you can do even better with lowering some of those rates on businesses.
Now, would you eliminate all the social engineering that goes on in the tax code and all the deductions and so forth? Or would you keep all those deductions in and just lower rates a little more?
I say, in principle, if you could eliminate as many as you can, speaking as an economist now, I know that those lower rates, if you like, those are the ones that will induce job hiring and induce people to do good things as the incentives. And so to lower those rates, you've got to take away a lot of the loopholes. I'd take away as many as you can. But the truth is, we live in a democracy, and people, some people depend on those loopholes, and they want them, so they're hard to change. And that's why tax reform is tough. We did it in the late 1980s, big tax reform, so we can do it again. But the reality is, you probably can't eliminate all of them.
Well, Dr. Taylor, we're pretty much down to like the last minute or two. Is there any other word that you want to tell us about what this country can do? Are you optimistic about the future for our country? I am, but I think we're going to have a couple of difficult years in front of us.
I am optimistic based on our history, but it doesn't mean you can just be complacent and not talk about it and not get out and help make the changes. I think what I've tried to do in this book, First Principles, is not just give the principles, but apply them to, as you asked me about healthcare, the budget. And the more people realize that, hey, this is not all that difficult from an economic perspective. It's difficult politically. And I think that there's, if you got a grassroots movement going, you get people say, yeah, we can get this done. That's the way to do it. But it takes involvement. It takes people getting involved, and you can't just sit back and let it happen because it won't.
What's your prediction about Europe? I mean, is it going to be a problem, and is it going to flow over here?
Well, it is a problem, and it hasn't reached its peak in my view of a problem. It's going to get worse before it gets better. The impact over here, of course, obviously depends on the size of any kind of a downturn over there. But at this point, I think it's not our problem right now, in the sense that's not what we should be trying to solve, Europe's problems, but we should instead be trying to solve our problems, therefore thereby strengthening our economy so that we don't get hit. We're kind of vulnerable now because it's such a weak economy. So in terms of doing something about it, I would say doing the things that I talk about in this book, and also finding people to go to government and elect them to carry it out.
Well, Dr. Taylor, I really appreciate your time with us, and I can understand why you won the 2012 Hayek Prize for the book First Principles, and I would recommend that everyone who's interested in how to get our country revived, this is a great starting point right here, 5 Key Principles of Restoring America's Prosperity. So, Dr. Taylor, again, I really appreciate your time with us here.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Thank you, sir. And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're turning it over to Rich Andre in traffic.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Key provisions are coming out of the Department of Labor that business owners need to beware. It's amazing how many business owners listen to talk radio. July 1st is the date for transparency on 401k pension fees. The rules are designed to help the employees better understand their 401k cost structure, but they also cause major risks to an employer who's not properly prepared. If you have a savings plan, it's imperative that you have an objective review of your 401k plan. Our independence and fee-only structure puts us in the best position to help you, a business owner, make sure your plan is compliant. Give me the chance to meet with you in a no-obligation meeting to explain the risk of the new transparency rules and the benefits of a professional, independent, fee-only fiduciary to help guide you through the process. Call 410-823-7283.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die.
Now back to more of Money, men Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
The brave men of the Green Beret.
There you go, Noah. Now that's a song, Noah. We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Dr. Taylor was with us for the first half hour of the show. And now we're on an open show, so you get to be the guest. You can be the guest to follow Dr. Taylor. And if you don't understand who Dr. Taylor is, I would say, excuse me, he's one of the top 5 economists in the world. And there is no doubt about that. The Taylor Principle that we talked about at the beginning of the show has guided central bank policy for at least the last 20 or more years of economic policy until about 6 or 7 years ago. And Chairman Greenspan and Chairman Bernanke decided to go away from that and start to do their own intuition as to what they thought should happen. And, yeah, it seems like it worked. So did Greenspan. Seemed like he had worked for a while. And the new policy is punishing savers and retirees And it's rewarding big corporations that are borrowing money or speculating with money like J.P. Morgan. And, okay, Noah. And it causes disturbances that sooner or later are going to reverberate through the economy. When that's going to happen, I'm not sure, but it will happen. So anyway, if you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680, and I'm here all by myself, so you're just going to have to listen to me ramble on. If you don't call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question. And in the interim, I don't get anybody calling, I got to just ramble on. So let me think about something to talk about. Well, let's talk about this. Like we listened to that news report just before the hour at 6:30. And they were talking about how in the summer, the market goes down, and by fall, the Fed does some kind of stimulus or the ECB does some type of stimulus and things come around. Here's my prediction, and you can test me on this. Call me back in November or so and see if I was right or wrong. And here it is. In this situation, it's going to continue to bob up and down, and the trend will be down. And people will expect that in fall something will start turning around. You'll get some economic Fed policy or whatever stimulus package come in, and people are going to start thinking, okay, this is it. This is what we've been waiting for. And when it gets implemented, it's not going to work, and everybody's going to run for the exits. And when they run for the eggs, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be real interesting. Now, you say, why do you say this? Well, let's take the precedence, the foresight that we just saw in the last week. And that is that, everybody was expecting Spain to be helped. And they came out with more money than anyone ever expected them to help Spain with. Over $125 billion to help them work their banks, situation. It was more than they even thought that the banks, even the worst scenario. It was more. And they figured, this is a big gun. This is the bazooka we've been waiting for. And boom, Monday morning, Tuesday came, and the markets fell apart that day. And I think that's going to be foresight, foreshadowing, whatever you want to call it, for what's going to happen throughout the rest of this year. And Europe is going to have serious troubles trying to stay together. There's going to be a lot of protests in the streets of Europe, and their banking system is in serious trouble. The French banking system is probably worse than the Spanish banking system. Yeah, I'm being a little exaggerating there, but I think it's in pretty bad shape. And the German banking system has a lot of problems in and of itself. The Greek banking system is totally bankrupt, and the Italian bank system isn't far behind Spain. So, anyway, be very careful this year. I'm just telling you, be very careful. We're going to go to our callers here, Tom in South Baltimore. Tom, how can we help you?
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate you having such a learned gentleman on, as you did before, and discussing topics that are actually germane to people's lives instead of a lot of the fluff that we get from a lot of the mainstream media. I wanted to ask you and get your opinion and the opinion of other listeners about property taxes. I'm not keen on the idea of property tax. It makes people who think that they're homeowners more or less renters, when in fact they should not be in a situation like that when they bought and paid for a home and the property. I think a lot of people may not realize what kind of jeopardy that they're in at the hands of local governments when they can simply, at their whim, raise their property taxes to the point where they can literally tax people out of their homes. And in these days, or at least it was in the past, your home was, if you were a valid or a good saver, it was where you kept all your
Let me just say this, Tom, and that is that I'm actually a big fan of property taxes because I think that people who own property get a lot of benefit from the government, such as the police force. That's a great example, such as the road system, getting to and from your properties and so forth. So I'm a big fan of property taxes in the sense that there's a there's a coordination between the ownership of property and the benefits that government provides to some degree. But now here's where you come. Here's where you come in. You're coming in saying that is fine, and I have no problem with reasonable property taxes. It's when they want to stick it to property tax people because they don't want to raise taxes in other areas of all the other people that are getting benefits and don't want to pay for them. And that's where I think you're coming from. And I can't disagree with you that. Real quick, I got to run on.
Yeah, I agree with you in regards to the police and other services and whatnot. To a certain extent, I think a lot of people would take issue with that. But I think there should be a cap. I think
politicians get carried away with taxes. You know, they're greedy. They call Wall Street greedy, but politicians are the biggest, greediest bunch of people I think there is in this country right now. All they're looking to do is take money, confiscate money from somebody else and spend it on somebody else to support their political base. I've got to run, Tom, but I don't disagree with you at all in what you're talking about. Derek in Easton, how are you?
Pretty good. I wanted to talk about the banking system, but I wanted to agree with Tom. I think the issue here is the fundamental right of private property, and when the government feels that they can have the right to take that away from you based on a tax, then we don't have that right. So
our property taxes are capped to some degree here in the state of Maryland.
Right.
So, I mean, we got to give them at least that. They do. We don't want to we don't want to make them sound like they don't at least do a little bit here. But that's not all property. It's only homestead property. But go ahead, Derek. Ask your question.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion on, obviously with all the real estate debacle and that's gone on. I've been in the industry for about 25 years in the real estate industry, but looking at the future of, most of the mortgage crisis and all that really looked like it's all just been papered over, and we've moved the debt up to a national level. But what is your outlook on, the long-term outlook for banking? We're talking about Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Romney's even talked about, shutting down FHA. And, good or bad, maybe all these things are necessary, but what is your outlook on the future of the banking system and real estate, and mortgages and so forth? What's your view on all that?
Well, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and FHA are all three bankrupt. I mean, they're period. They're bankrupt. They're
right.
Defunct. They had a good purpose. They fulfilled a good purpose for a while, but they got too political and politically motivated, and they made a lot of dumb decisions, and they're bankrupt. They need to be totally they need to be totally shut down, and something new has to be rebuilt. And one of the ways that you could rebuild it is the way the Europeans do it, which is called covered bonds, where the bank has skin in the game, the homeowner, the borrower has skin in the game, and the bondholder has skin in the game. So it's none of this, somebody borrows the money, and then the bank who did it makes a bunch of money and then offloads it to somebody else who loses all the money if the person doesn't pay.
Right.
And in the covered bond concept in Europe, which does make a lot of sense, the bank who does the bond, if it doesn't come through, they're going to lose. And the people who buy those bonds are, they're going to be relatively safe because they're getting the sure bet of the bond. In other words, the first dollars that come in guarantee
right.
them to get their money back. And I think that's the way that makes it a little more prudent that you don't have people lending money haphazardly in some of these countries. And also in Europe, like in Ireland and so forth, one of the problems with Ireland is that when you go bankrupt, you can't get rid of your home debt in Ireland. You're still on the hook for the rest. You can't just foreclose and walk away or do a short sale, et cetera, et cetera. They can take everything, So it's I think that the whole system needs to be rethought. And I think it's a good time to be doing it, but nobody's willing to attempt it. President Obama hasn't even talked about it. So it's a critical issue, Derek. All right.
All right. Thank you.
It is a very critical issue if we're really going to get housing rocking and rolling for real. We're going to Ed real quick, and then we're going to take a break, okay? Ed, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Real quick, I got a simple question, probably too simple, but I'm 48. I got like $175,000 in the market. I want to pull it out and do something radical. Just pull it out. I'm tired of losing it. What do I do?
What's radical?
No, I'm saying I want to pull it out. I'm tired of being.
I know, but what do you say? You said you want to do something radical with it. Is that what you?
I think that's what people would call radical nowadays, pulling totally out of the market. But if I do that,
I think if you wanted to do something radical with it, I would pull it out and I would sit in a very safe place for 2 months, 6 months, a year. And when everyone else is falling apart and wondering when this thing is going to end, that's when you should go back in. And because I think we are getting to the bottom of the market, and they're usually they go in three cycles, and we've
right.
already had one and two. We're now looking for the third big one, and I think that one's coming within the next 12 months or so. That's just a guess.
Right.
All right?
Yeah, just tired of losing it. You know, I'm 48, and it's just ridiculous. So
well, the market,
what should I do with it?
Yeah, the market's up a good bit right now. Even though it's come back some, it's still up a good bit from where it was in 2009.
Right.
All right, sir?
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. We got to take a break. We're going to be right back after this break with the weather.
Ba 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 ba.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth here, Drew Tignanelli without Timothy J. Maurer, but he'll be back next week. Actually, he'll be back next week, and I'll be gone. I'll be in California. Here I come to a conference out there, and Timmy will be sitting. That's right. That's why the Beach Boys were playing. We're going to Steve in West Baltimore. Steve, how can we help you?
Well, good evening.
How are you, sir?
Good. Your interview was quite interesting.
Hey, Steve. Steve, you got to pick up a receiver or something. You got a little...
A little echo?
Yeah.
Is it still an echo?
Yes.
Oh, I have to call you back then.
Okay, you call right back, and I'll put you back on in a second, okay?
All right.
I'm going to Tom in Baltimore. Tom, how can we help you?
Okay, Drew, I'd like you to comment on something I've heard frequently talked about in seminars and written about, is this concept of a 17-year market cycle over the last roughly century, you know, 17 years in advance, and then roughly 17 years of kind of flat or down, and that it's
if you really want to
demographics
yeah,
and all of that, and
if
I think it's based on something that is no longer applicable, which is the world population is not going to expand like the Western population, which dominated economics in the last 50, 60 years.
I think that you're right, but there is some form of cycles that you have to be aware of. And one of the best books on this is The Alchemy of Finance by George Soros. I don't think much of George Soros, but I think his book, The Alchemy of Finance, is one of the best on cycles of markets. And there is no specific time frame. It's not 17 years. It's sometimes it could be as much as 25 on the way up, like the bond market right now is in its 30th year on the way up. And maybe this is the final bottom of that market. There are cycles. They do happen. They're not easily predictable. They're not predictable at all, I guess, is the better way to say it. But Alchemy of Finance would be a great book to read if you want to learn something about cycles. All right? Good call. Good question. I got to run on. And I've got – is Steve there now, Noah? I guess not. Is he? Is Steve there? All right, we're going to try one more time, see if I can get Steve. Steve, do you have a question?
True. How is how now?
It's a little better, but okay. Go ahead and ask your question.
Well, I just want to ask a question and say that I heard the author say it was 80, and I was an investment banker in the 80s and studied college in 1980. George Gill's reading of the supply side versus the Keynes theory. Do you think that if there's a chance that the economy's going to... Because I see, Drew, that if we have change in presidents, that's to begin to globally leadership, you know, over there with the euro situation going on, as well as generating, as you allude to, growth in the corporate world, because we have about $1,000 on the side, trillions on the sideline. Do you think that market was to change, I mean, go upward?
Well, you know, the problem I'm having, Steve, is that I'm missing every other word that you're saying. And so I can't, you're saying something about Keynes and supply side economics and.
Versus, you ever heard of George Gilder?
Yeah.
Like the supply side versus demand side. And in this situation.
Ah, demand side. That's what you're saying, right?
Demand side. I think that in this situation, we need Romney, if he wins, to look at the George Gilder side. And that's basically saying that if we don't begin to lower tax for corporations but have caveats on there to hire people.
Yes, okay. So what you're saying is what we need to do is, like Dr. Taylor said, we need to lower taxes on corporations. We need to lower regulations on corporations. We need to lower taxes on individuals and let them make their own darn decision whether they want to buy a car or a house, et cetera, et cetera. And we need to get rid of the special interest groups in the tax laws, and the rates need to come down dramatically, sort of like, you know, unfortunately, Herman Cain was a bit of a joke, you know, as a potential person that we should trust in leadership. But he had some good general economic ideas, such as 999. And if we would implement something along that line, I think it could be absolutely tremendous for our country.
Because the social side, as you said, is going to have to be 10% a year social cuts in government. And the person that was able to articulate that now is Christie in New Jersey.
Yeah, more.
The person that's been able to articulate.
Or Scott Walker in Wisconsin. He did a great job of that, and I think people supported him on that now.
I think that you advising people with the investments, that's what people want to see, because with this $2 billion laws and people just.
$2 billion? Wait until you hear the final number. It's going to be upwards of $5 to $10 billion when it's over.
Thank you, Drew.
All right. You take care, Steve. A good call. Anyway, this is toward the end of the show. Again, next week, Tim will be here. And I don't know what he's going to do. I know that at the end of the month, June 27th, we're going to be interviewing Mark Skousen. And we're going to be talking about maxims and proverbs of the market and how they apply still today, ones that have been said for over 200 years and why they still apply today. Anyway, this is Money, Riches, Wealth. Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Talk Radio 680.